So we have a project. We have a project. We call it OM Champion Project.
Dans le paquet, il n'est pas signalé en jeu face à Joël Matt et ça va être le but de Chris Wallet. But de Wallet, 1-0 pour l'Olympique de Marseille.
Right. Welcome back to the Marseille View. It's always weird when we record because I hit the record button and then the countdown, so the timer restarts. And I never know, it stays frozen on 0 seconds for ages and then it just jumps up to like 8 seconds. So apologies if anybody has like the awkward silences at the start of every show, but that's the reason why. Welcome back. We're all so busy doing it regularly and Marseille keep us busy and just so typical, like the total implosion, massive chaos and now rebound and so much has happened at the club since we last recorded with Charles. Welcome back. How are you?
I thought you would start with a lady. Yeah, I'm good. I think we decided to record the podcast back because Marseille is winning again. And so we are back to see how much we love our club and we're starting watching games again. No, joke aside, I'm good. And it was a pleasant surprise that there was some kind of a comeback. So all good.
Yeah, it was. Well, last time you and I recorded it, we were both saying that it was almost rock bottom. It was just so everything was so wrong. In the terms of the gameplay, the attitudes, everything.
It was a dark Monday, early February. Now the spring is coming. The sun is here. We're back.
Good stuff. And joining us, you're right. Maybe it would have been polite to start with Kaylee, but welcome back, Kaylee.
Hi, guys. How are you doing?
good.
I've got a skip in my step now that we're not shit anymore and everything's a bit rosier and after, what, 3 games or something?
Well, yeah, it's the classic off Flamad, as we say, right? It's like, oh, look, you know, we've won one game and Diaz scored 2 goals. He's better than Zidane. It's the classic. but yeah, guys, good to have you. We can't go game by game. And to be honest, actually, I was thinking about this. Like, the last few games of the Gattuso were so fucking poor. There isn't even anything to analyse apart from how poor they were, and how bad the performances were. But yeah, we'll cover that. And effectively, the chronology will inevitably take us to the end of the Gattuso regime. And I guess we can all say our thoughts on what went wrong and what's been going very wrong in the background for him to obviously get fired. Or did he get fired? Apparently, like, there was a mutual agreement, whatever. Probably took some money and ran. I'm very glad to see the back of him. Jean-Louis Gasset came in, quite a surprise and lackluster appointment, but similarly to when Gattuso joined, if you remember the context, any decent manager worth their salt is probably looking at this and going, fuck no, I'm not walking into that shocking state of affairs at the club and the squad. He's come in to basically do Gattuso 2.0, which is be a fireman and fix the players' heads and get them playing football again. And it's been different from the Gattuso regime so far, and he's certainly succeeded where Gattuso seems to have failed for all those months. And then we'll just finish off with the next run of games and discuss our chances in Europe, because we are actually still in the Europa League. And we've got a very interesting draw against one of our other managers we had this season, which is Marcelino, who's now the coach of Villarreal. But last time we recorded, we just lost to Lyon. Charles and I were both very, very down and I guess realistic about the state of the club and the squad and how things were, and the players were just so deflated, and the fans, we were very close to getting very deflated as well, because it looked hopeless. And after that game, we played Metz, another game where they were down to 10 men, like earlier in the season, and we failed to win at the Velodrome. So we drew with them 1-1, I believe. Then we played Shakhtar in the first Europa League playoff game, drew 2-2 there after leading twice. And then we lost to Brest away in one of the worst performances from OM in years. And that was the end for Gattuso. Now, what went wrong after Lyon, Kayleigh, I guess? Lyon was bad, but how did it get even worse?
Well, I think the Mets game, it was the Gigo red, wasn't it? The red card. And that
down to 10, exactly, yes. Not that.
Yeah, yeah. I think that set the tone for the game, just the usual chaotic thing where you kind of know what's coming. It was all very, very predictable with Gattuso. And then obviously the following game, was the Shakhtar game sandwiched in between Shakhtar. The loss to Brest when they had 10 men?
It was. Yeah.
Yeah. Because that was chaotic in itself, wasn't it? With did we score in the 90th and then they scored in the 92nd? Just typical brainless stuff that would become accustomed to under him. That he was supposed to come in to stamp out, obviously, with all the disciplinarian type figure, which he turned out not to be. It was all kind of Grinter and no substance to it, really.
No game plan, yeah.
Yeah, it's like night and day, isn't it, really?
Yeah, there's if you had to pick out, I was thinking about it the other day, and I've sort of replayed it in my head how the last few months have unfolded, and where did it go wrong for him? Because before Christmas we put some wins together. Aubameyang finally found form, scored. We beat Ajax and we won 3-0 against Lyon at home, and everybody was like, oh, finally the Gattuso system is working, the approach is working, the players are recovering mentally, and then the wheels just came off even worse than they did before he came in. And what do you think that's down to? Is it the players? Is it him? Who do you blame the most?
I mean, we can't really discount what was going on off the pitch as well. We had the whole drama with Klaus's entourage in the background, and was he feigning injury in these France chances and all that kind of stuff. There was still a lot of like background noise, obviously stuff with Pablo, constant dialogue with fans when it was going wrong as well. So you can't really discount that. But again, like we just said, it was the predictability of what was going to come. Like, you never felt comfortable. We were immediately sitting back. It's a longer term problem than him, even, you know. I think it's hard to pinpoint because there's so many things that were going wrong everywhere, you know. Certain players weren't firing, like in Jai.
It's not as easy. Not as easy as just blaming Vitinha, just blaming him, right? It's not as easy as that.
No. Definitely not.
In the past, it's a classic OM thing as well, where when things go to shit, everybody likes to find, likes to bully, likes to blame someone. There's always one player every year that gets it. Balerdi was the one a few years ago. Last year it was Tavares, for valid reasons, I guess, but... There's a big blame culture, but I guess what you're saying is that it's a collective of failures from everything at every level, really.
Yeah, totally. When you think of what was said with the meeting between the fans and whatever, like Rongier was not captain material or whatever, Gigo was the preferred person, and then Gigo immediately goes and gets a red card in the next time, just chaos everywhere, isn't it?
How can you say that to Rongier? The guy's not played for 3 months, and the fans in the meeting are like, oh, you need to man up, you need to whip the boys into shape. And man, can you imagine being Rongier in that meeting? You're sat there going, sorry, what? Like, it's just It's just so chaotic. I mean, Charlotte, anything to add?
Still many blame Gattuso and whoever decided to appoint Gattuso. I feel like Gattuso was just one pony trick. And it was to get the team together, the changing room all together. But then players started to realize he doesn't play me in my right position. I mean, when you play at that level, you can really see when a coach is not at the level you want to be. You work for a few weeks when the heads get together and he was forced to play into a system he doesn't enjoy. And then you're winning. And then the coach start talking about system again and going back to 4-3-3 and saying like a back three is for defensive position and counter-attacking. When you play at that level, like guys like Aubameyang or even close with Ace, I mean, he play a very aggressive offensive team at Lens playing back three or Veretout. You just realize the guy is just an idiot, Brennes. He can't take you any further. And we are mid-table, I would say, at this stage. Just like clearly, we're going to go nowhere with that guy. So after managing to get the heads up, the heads get down again. And to me, it's a clear failure of the management. You need to take your players to another level, and you fail to do so. Sorry, but Marseille is 2-3 leagues above his management skills.
Minimum.
I was just thinking maybe Italian Serie C, but even in Italian Serie C, you have all those young guys getting just their graduation from the Italian coaching. Yeah, but that was his first experience, but still, doesn't look like he has improved much from here.
No.
You're exactly right, because look at his post-match interviews towards the end. He was saying the same thing, and it kind of got more and more pathetic. He was basically talking himself out of the job. It was like he was waiting to be sacked, you know.
Yeah, he was lost. I think he had no solution. He has no end on what's happening on the pitch and outside the pitch. So, yeah, too much for him.
Lack of experience plays a big part, but I mean, if you'd have told me...
I mean, lack of experience, Valencia, Napoli, AC Milan.
Yeah, but look at lack of proper experience as in long-term management jobs where he was somewhere for...
I think he had 10 years more. Let's say it, Ben. It's not about experience.
No, he is.
Shit manager. He's just in Mendes' portfolio, and Mendes is just...
That's it.
...putting him wherever he can, so that's it.
No, it's true, and that's exactly what I was going to say. It's too easy to hide behind that lack of experience excuse, because if you looked at that, you know, those teams from all those years ago, look how many of them have gone into management, you know, Zidane, whatever. You can take the best players, but you have Simeone, for example, who wasn't a top player, but he was good. He's a great manager. It's not automatic, and it's never has been. And we've also seen the trend of the Nagelsmanns and Tuchels and the Mourinhos, who were never big players, like Klopp as well, but have turned into great managers through having a unique style or being scholars and that kind of thing. And if you take all of those players in that Milan squad, you look at Pirlo, you look at so many of the others, Nista, there were so many like smart, intelligent players, and Gattuso was not one of them. You know, he's the type of guy we would have loved to have as a player at Marseille, because he was Grinta, he was fucking Pitbull, and the fans would have loved his fighting spirit and his madness. But he's not. I would never have predicted he would go into football management, and certainly not at the top level. Like maybe as an assistant or a coach for a youth team or some shit, maybe. But as you say, Charles, I mean, the guy's just not cut out for it. He must be, especially when you see how things have turned around now. If I'm him, I'm sat at home watching this, going, Jesus, right, I'm going to retire. Like, it's madness. And the whole way the narrative played out is that he came in as you both said, you know, he's come in with one job. It's to fix the heads. It's to get the squad unified, to reinvigorate, re-energize the players. And it didn't work initially. It was a huge struggle. And then he pragmatically, and it's not pragmatically, I think he already realized he was out of his depth. And the only thing he could do to save his bacon was to switch to the back three, because
that's the only thing he knows. Yeah. That's the only system he knows how to organize and to...
Well, no, he was playing 4-3-3, but when in December he went to 3-5-2 in the game against Lyon, then he kept...
He was forced to.
He was forced to, it was last resort because he tried all of his stuff. It wasn't working. And that was the only way in his head. I think he was like, oh, this is the only way I can buy some time is if I put the players in the best possible dispositions and system according to them, then I would have done everything. And if they still shit, it's them. And it worked. And I think then it's not cocky. It's just stupidity. Like once we put together that run of results before Christmas, he goes into the winter break and part of him probably thinks, right, you know, now the players get me, they get my style, they get what I'm trying to do. I'm going to switch back to what I want to do. And that's when it collapsed because he was just too stubborn and too stupid to realize that he didn't reinvigorate the squad. Like they reinvigorated themselves in December because confidence and a few wins and stuff and playing in the system that actually players playing in their real positions in that team. And throughout January and early February, he went back to 4-3-3, playing players out of position. And beyond that, you can play any system with any team if you're a good coach, but you need to bring to the table a game plan. You need to have, you know, players making runs and little triangles, you know, you pass the ball to me and this guy's going to run in my back and I'm going to drop deep to free up some space for him. Nothing was happening. Everything was so static and predictable, as you said, Kaylee. So clearly it's massive, massive fuck up. And many of us, I think we all said this when he was appointed. We were like, well, it is what it is. We're not going to get anyone better. But it was destined to fail. But the fact that it failed so catastrophically is crazy.
Coming back to your point you made on AC Milan, you know, like Ancelotti is really hands-off manager, does a strict discipline or strict game plan, because he manages a changing room at Madrid, AC Milan. But those guys, when you play with Pirlo, Seedorf, those guys are the system. You don't need to create a system for them. You put those 11 players on the pitch, and they're gonna figure it out. This is not the case of Marseille. Look at the players that we have. Tell Jonathan Clauss and Jonathan Veretout to figure out what's going on the pitch and deliver. You can't just put 11 names and sit. And clearly Gattuso is not capable of it.
As well, I think what has become very evident now is that the squad itself, it's such a mismatch in terms of personality of player. You've got an Aubameyang who's like a mega ego. And then you've got an Ndiaye who was struggling for confidence and things like that. And I think when you get someone in as the disciplinarian type person who's going for a one-size-fits-all approach, it doesn't work. You need somebody more pragmatic, which we seem to now have. Everyone looked miserable as sin previously. And the shift now that you can see is evident. You know, they seem even closer. In just a short space of time, because we'll have somebody that is more pragmatic in that sense and in a mentality sense. I think with the squad we have, we need that. Because you're not going to change everybody into one unit immediately, you know, and Gattuso failed to do it in quite some time, you know.
I fully agree with that. I mean, I'm going to talk about Gasset. I mean, this group, there are some good quality players in that squad. Just put them in their position. Whatever system, Clauss is injured, find something out of Sarr and I can't remember, member, figure it out something, but put them in their position. It's enough quality to beat Brest, Montpellier, Clermont, Metz, etc. Just don't be a pragmatic and think you are like De Zerbi of AC Milan and you can impose a discipline and a type of football to someone, a game plan you don't even have, you think you can have, but you can't communicate it to your players. So yeah, you're 100% right on this. Just be flexible is your approach and just put them in the right position. And that's all you have to do.
It was probably destined to fail, but it's just the way it failed and that false dawn. And yeah, we are where we are. And I think it happened after that game, and I think it was it's classic as always. You know, the management, they don't come out and say officially, but Bin Hassad did an interview with Canal Plus, and it was broadcast lo and behold the day of the Brest game, and he was saying, oh, you know, we want to build something in the longer term here. I want to get a manager in who will stay for more than 2 years and who will actually build something solid and good foundations and the academy and blah, blah, blah. Talks the good talk. A few days before that, I think it leaked on Thursday or Friday that apparently, well, it didn't leak, but there were stories in La Provence saying that, oh, well, whatever happens, the management supports Gattuso and stuff, which is, as we know, very often a death sentence in football when the board or the chairman or whoever it is comes out and, well, in this case, didn't even come out and say it, but when those sort of stories start flying around in the press that, yeah, he's got our full support. He's here for the long term. The players need to turn it around and wake up. Well, it doesn't always work like that. And lo and behold, I mean, Brest, it was one of the worst games I've seen from any team in the last 10 years. I mean, it was just, again, that predictability, as you say, Katie, like we didn't even try. We did nothing. I think we had one shot on target again, or not even one, but it was just pass, and then lose the ball for a stupid mistake or a miscontrol. And you're on the back foot because they've been playing good football this season and they're confident. And the minute they went down to 10 men, I think we watched it in the bar, a few of us, and I said to everybody, I was like, yeah, now the writing's on the wall. We're definitely going to lose this. They're going to score. And they did. Fucking Lys Milou as well, which is an ex-Nice player, and he usually regularly scores against us, which is annoying, but... I mean, it's so. I think beyond the result, I think it's. There was the footage, as you said, Kayleigh, earlier, from Longoria and Benassia very quickly after the game. They were on the phone looking very anxious. And it was just like, I think they knew, we knew, he knew, the squad knew. They were like, yeah, it's broken beyond repair now. It's then. Like the spirit that they showed in that game and the performance is the performance of a team that clearly. Is that nothing's going to work. You've tried everything. Nothing's going to work. You're just not going to get the rub of the green. So you cut your losses, and that's what we did. So we sacked him or came to a mutual agreement and he left. And that Monday was my happiest Monday for quite a while. we've discussed it already, but Katie, were you surprised or was it when I say surprised, did it come as a shock to how fast it happened, should they have done it the week before? I mean, it made total sense, right? There's no one, there was no coming back from that performance against Brest.
No, I think with it being so close to the end of the window as well, I wasn't surprised, but I was surprised in the nature, like, so immediately the rumours came out with the pictures, the on the phone scrambling around. It just again looked pretty Keystone Cop kind of unprofessional, and at first I thought it was unsubstantiated, but then I don't know if it was in an interview with Gassi, but apparently was contacted like an hour after the game. Like whatever mechanism was behind that, what had he already been pre-contacted by Benatia, or we don't know, but I think by the nature of what Gattuso had just given up, thrown the towel in, I don't think they had any option after that performance, really, because then eyes were firmly on them again, you know.
Yeah, and as you said, you mentioned the context around Klose and Benassia, and I think Benassia especially, and with that interview that I just mentioned where he was like, oh, we're here for the long term, and he tried to come across all calm and composed and professional, and then very very quickly after that it emerges in the press that he sent some pretty like downright abusive was the term I think I saw in the press to member of Klose's entourage, and he was like, no, he needs to behave, he needs to stop. We don't know exactly what was said in the messages, but for all accounts and purposes, it was not pretty. And he's trying to paint this picture of someone who's in control and knows what he's doing and is very sleek and smooth and wears nice suits and stuff. And very quickly, he's faced with a full-on crisis where he's got to eat his own words and swallow his pride and find a new coach out of somewhere and not make the same mistake that was made earlier in the season with Gattuso, because... again, the fan, it wasn't to do with the fans this time or unrest at the club. It was just the state of the squads and the results and the fact that you couldn't really be wrong if you were to assess it after the Brest game and go, well, there's nothing left to do with this team. There's nothing left to play for this season. It's a write-off. So who is going to want to come in? It's Gasset, for all accounts purposes. We'll go into what we've seen so far. But hey, look, we found someone, and French, not French. I guess they just went for a safe option. And there was footage. Longoria and Benassia and Bully were at the AFCON. Maybe they met with him, or maybe they had a chat with him. Not even to this purpose, but maybe they just met him and saw something they liked about the guy and thought, yeah, he's a safe pair of hands. Everything Gattuso was supposed to be, you know, man motivator, someone who's going to fix the heads and the hearts and the football will follow, because Charles, as you said, there is quality in the squad. But they couldn't get it wrong this time, and so far so good. But were you, again, Charles, the same question as Kelly, were you surprised at how quickly it happened with Gattuso, or the fact that they seemed to have somebody lined up straight away?
No, I'm not very surprised, because I still believe that despite the odds, Benassia and Longoria still hope to clinch a European seat for next season. And they could see after Brest, Metz, that the team was going nowhere. And as well, Gattuso clearly had lost his mojo and his motivation to take the team higher. So you could be happy with finishing mid-table and think about next season. Or you feel like, given that current League One season when no one is just scoring and making a lot of points, you still might have a small chance to clinch fifth, sixth if you are doing very good run, maybe fourth. So I guess there's still hope in our management, and we will be okay to fix the team for 3 months. So you can go like Lyon, someone from the academy and someone desperate to get on the bench. Well, it looks like we have no one in our academy. Or you can go someone at the end of his career who is like dream at this age to be able to coach a team like Marseille. He's just happy to be there. And contrary to Gattuso, I think he's still got the brain. He's flexible. He's aware. I mean, we all know about his track record with Blanc and all the team he's been coaching. They've been well coached. The only risk that we have with Gasset, and it's coming back to what you said about Benassia, is a professionalism, making sure like players are working out and training properly and there's not too much drift away from the pitch. But apparently
Benassia is doing that. Apparently that was another thing I read in the press last week. Is that Benassia is now patrolling the training
stage. That's so BS. Do you remember like Longoria said the same? And then you see how fit is Payet in Vasco. It's like, yeah, it's just communication. I'm pretty sure like Benassia is the same. It's just communication when you start on Marseille. You need to get professionalism. We need to be like in Italy or Spain. But no one is monitoring that. They just leave this to the manager, and the manager just not looking after that. So that's the only risk we have with Gasset. But I think it's this group of players, they're good guys, I think, maybe close as this. I mean, like you mentioned, I'm 100% believe he has done so, but we've seen worse in the past. So if he just sees, I think he's still a good group of lads. And with Cassie at his helm, I don't know if we're going to be, I think we start from too far, but we have a chance to clinch fifth or sixth, I think. Well, a few weeks ago with Gattuso, I'd say we have no chance to finish fifth and sixth. So at least I think it was a wise move to make at this stage, and to be able to find someone okay for 3 months is pretty good. So they found someone good.
I have nothing to add to what you both said. Yeah, the writing was on the wall even before that. I think after the Lyon game could have been a chance, and I think the fact that we didn't lose to Shakhtar was maybe bought Gattuso some more time, and they thought, oh, we saw some improvement, because at least we scored 2 goals and actually looked not as bad as we had against Lyon. And then the Metz game happened, and it was like, oh, great. For fuck's sake, we can't even beat Metz at home. We get a red card. He was just living on borrowed time from since the Lyon game, I think. And yeah, they found someone quickly. Good. He's the first away manager to win his first three games, I think, ever. It's you couldn't make this up. And the other stat, I know you're the stat man, Charles, but we scored 11 goals in Ligue 1 under the whole of Gattuso, and in Gasset's first three games, we've scored nine goals in Ligue 1 already, and 12 in total if you take into account the 3-1 win against Shakhtar. So yeah, Gasset came in just before the European Cup game. We went a goal down to Shakhtar, and again, everybody was probably like, oh, here we go again. Yeah, it's just too far gone. It can't be fixed. And huge reaction in the second half. I think Shakhtar as well, due to the fact that they've only just restarted their season when they played this the week before, because there's a long winter break in Ukraine. They got tired, and we capitalised on that, and we just put them under pressure. And Aubameyang had a great second half. Saar did well as well, and we got the win. We qualified for the next round, and then we won 4-1 at home to
Montpellier.
Yeah, sorry, and then 5-1 on Sunday to Clermont away. And it's everything just looks so simple, and it's just.
And then the season will be 21 against Le Havre. We keep that
imagine.
Sorry, Matt Addick.
I mean, just briefly before we go into the games themselves, I mean, none of us are tacticians or anything, but what do you think the key thing Gasset has changed so far? How's it worked so quickly for him?
I'm a bit of a foot ex in terms of tactics, I've got to admit, but I think he went one with did we go five at the back at one point? It was the game before the game after, because we've played one that was 4-3-3 under him. I'm not sure if that was the one where Mbemba was more or less playing as a right wing back. He assisted Aubameyang, I think. But I think it's just the training ground videos that came out immediately. Everyone looked lighter. I think it's probably more a mental shift than anything else. Like, he's came in with essentially nothing to lose. If you had told me, I'd have got a 70-year-old Jean-Louis Gasset who would literally, a few weeks before being sacked mid-AFCON after... I'm pretty sure it was that Ivory Coast's heaviest defeat. 4-0, was it, against Equatorial Guinea? Something like that. If you had told me we were going to get... I don't think anyone could pretend... Any of us could pretend we were happy with that. I think some people thought, what else can we get? But I don't think anyone was happy with it, realistically. And we've all eaten some humble pie, haven't we? Like, who was he... Who has he managed? He's had a long career, but it's been pretty underwhelming, hasn't it? He was, I think, Istres, Montpellier, Saint-Étienne.
As a number one, yeah, he's.
And then obviously he's been with France and PSG as an assistant. Was it Sable, and Blanc, maybe?
Yeah, he was worked under Blanc, PSG, and France. Bordeaux, PSG, and France.
And the alleged, like, there was a lot of stories around about his time with the Ivory Coast. Apparently he was far too soft. There was players drinking and stuff. Is that right? Was that the kind of rumour that
partying.
It was way too lax? Yeah.
Yeah, they were partying the night before the tournament started or something. I guess it goes both ways, right? But for all accounts and purposes, like, what I remember of him is that generally... He was credited with being the genius behind Blanc, Bordeaux and PSG. And I think even Zlatan Ibrahimovic said it at the time. He was like, yeah, we've got Blanc, who's the manager guy. And then you've got this coach, Gasset, who's got us playing a style of football that is probably it's where I've enjoyed playing the most. And those two seasons that PSG were really good under Blanc. So for a big experienced player to come out like that and credit the guy, he was obviously doing something right. He's experienced, and I think you see the way that the Blancs Bordeaux were playing, and Marseille, we were competing with them when we had Guéret's at the time. It was, we couldn't get near them, even though we were on the upper ascendant path and we were progressing season after season. They were just on another level, and they got to a Champions League semi-final, didn't they? That they lost to Bayern, I believe.
Correct.
After beating Lyon.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it.
And getting out of a group stage with Bayern and Juventus.
Yeah, in the group. Yeah. So it's, yeah, he's a safe pair of hands, but he's also, yeah, I think he maybe in his old age he's a bit too tender and a bit too grandfather approach in terms of letting people get away with murder, but. I think it depends on what squad of players you've got. If you've got a squad of players that isn't united or doesn't have quality and they're dossers to begin with, it's not going to help. But when you've got a squad of players that are just down like the one we have, the quality is there. You just need to bring it to the surface and get these guys in a bit of a protective bubble so that they focus on having fun on the pitch again and that kind of thing. Then it can work. But for how long, we'll see. Shad, do you have anything to add about what's different about his approach?
It's just funny when you mention his time at Paris Saint-Germain when with Ibra. I just realized he did the same trick yesterday with NDI, playing as a number 9 but dropping to form a diamond in midfield. Do you remember Ibrahimovic was always dropping?
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
You have Lavezzi and was it Di Maria? Always like
attacking
the spin. I think no, that was the reason that Pastore was on the bench because of that. Because
Di Maria, was he already there?
I don't know.
Di Maria was already there.
But do you remember Ibrahimovic, or maybe it was Cavani. Cavani on the right and
yes, David
on the
left. It was Cavani.
Yeah, probably
yes.
Cavani. Yeah.
So he did the same trick yesterday. And my point really on once again the comparison between Gasset and Gattuso. He had three challenges. Shakhtar is a well-managed team, well-coached team. And the approach by Gasset was wrong and immediately changed. And then Shakhtar manager changed his approach again and immediately Gasset adjusted. So it was very interesting that Montpellier, we had the issue with Klose being suspended. And everyone was like, yeah, we need to, what are we going to play? Well, we don't have to play to replace Klose with the same player or within the same 3-4-3 system. We can have a good dynamism on the right wing by having two players with Mbemba and Sarr. One is more can cover and we can have a hybrid system. Once again, very instead of playing like, oh, Klose, we're going to replace with another player like Gattuso, who I've said, oh, Klose is injured. Oh, let's put Sarr or let's put Murillo or whatever can play right back. No, we can be creative. Same thing against Clermont. Once again, everyone is expecting a 3-4-3 because that's why everyone is expecting, why the team feels wide. What he comes with a 4-3-3, with that system with NDI dropping, Aubameyang in the left half space, and Klose and Merlin just attacking the wing, like he would have done in the back three. So it's just like, at least he's coaching in the right league and not two or three steps ahead of him. So that's good. And so far, he got it right. I guess he's not the only one. I mean, Printemps is here, his son is here as well, or maybe Ghislain Printemps' son is here. Abado is still here. So it's not only him, but credit to him so far. Three wins and three good tactical coups. While with Gattuso, I remember the win against Ajax or Rennes or Lorient. It was not because of him. It was really because of the player. It was not built on solid foundation. He just felt like he was the players playing well and the coach coaching well. So once again, that's a progress compared to where we were a few weeks ago. Sorry,
yeah,
everybody just seems lighter. Like, look at Ndiaye, look like a shell of a player. Like, it was one of the ones I was most excited about was signing.
Did I try to play him on the wing? Simple as that. Yeah. He's not a wing player.
He's not a wing player. But, like, just in terms of his whole demeanor, his body language is different. I know he got that goal and now he's like, he's heads up, you know, just classic psychological type intervention from someone that's probably really pumping him up, you know. It's made the world a difference to him so far.
Yeah, it's a shame. So I really think he's got the quality, right? But it's as always, and you add the Marseille context to it, it's super difficult. You come to a new league and you play in the European Cup for the first time. Granted, it's only the Europa League, apparently it's whatever. But I think I certainly enjoy watching it more than the Champions League in recent years because it's less predictable and it's more competitive and the teams are more evenly matched, I've come to think. But yeah, it's difficult. I'm always willing to give any player that comes to Marseille 1 year to adapt and then to show what they could do. If they have quality, then it will show, but it won't be straight away unless they're unreal. But yeah, with him, I would have loved to see him under Tudor or Sampoli because he would have been such a nifty little profile of player. It's like a better version of Harit because he's got the end product that Harit doesn't have, but he also gets in those spaces where he plays the ball in the right tempo. He knows when to pass it, to release it, and he's not dwelling on it or trying to play hero ball as he was earlier in the season because he was frustrated and desperate and not confident. And now he seems like a central piece to this well-oiled attacking machine because on Sunday he was at the start of almost every goal, and he played a big part. Obviously, he scored the first goal, and then him and Unai were just combining and tearing them to shreds in the second half. But he's an example amongst many that have massively improved under Gasset. And again, yes, it's a game of psychology. It's the football's there and. These guys have played football. They played for their national teams.
And you take on Gay? Because you didn't want to see him wearing the Marseille shirt, so you have to say something about it.
I knew you were going to bring this up. Look, he's another one. But the way things are, the state things are in, yeah, I was very vocal. You're right, last time I was like, I hope he rots and does his knee in. I still hope he does, but in the last game of the season, so that he doesn't play for his new club or he doesn't get as big a bonus when he does leave and screw us over. But we've had injuries, you know. Veretout, I don't think he's going to play very much the end of the season. The muscular injury he has is a bit like it's comparable to sciatica apparently, and it's one of those things that will never go away. So he'll probably play the rest of the season under painkillers if he does play, but I expect that he'll be rested quite often, sadly, because he's been one of our better players this season. But it means that you're short in midfield, so you don't really have a choice to bring Gay back, I guess. And I hate to see it personally because of the principle and the example that it sets. But desperate times, desperate measures is my take on that, mate.
I agree with you on that. Sorry, Charles. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. I would say it was Sven. I just wanted to challenge.
Yeah,
Ben.
I wanted
to record that.
I was just going to say, I totally agree with Ben. Like, in those scenarios, I think absolutely there should be no way back for someone like that. Like, to me, he's caused the club so much trouble for what has been a very mediocre output and that he wants away and all the contract stuff. But in reality, it's shrewd from Gasset because, as you say, if we have injuries, we've got a body there that could just be sat being disruptive. And it would be easy for him to be messing about or excluded entirely. So I think it's pretty clever to bring him in and give him a role, as much as I don't agree with like setting that precedent, as you said, Ben. But I think ultimately it's smart, you know.
Yeah, he does have a profile that we don't. He looks good in pre-season and he had a good loan at Sevilla. And he's got a profile that we don't really have in that midfield, which is... he's nifty, but he's also capable of being quite physical and imposing and energetic. So he's a bit like a poor man's Zombo Anguissa back in the day, right? I don't know if he'll reach the heights that Zombo Anguissa did after he left OM, but he's got that profile of player that we don't have in the squad. And so we're forced to bring him back into the fold due to injuries. Why not? Look, I hope he contributes to the team's success, but I'll be glad to see the back of him because he's an ungrateful little shit. That's it.
Yeah, I agree with you.
that sort of sums it up. I guess we'll just follow up with. I mean, we've won those games. The goal average is nice and tidy. I have to ask, and the answer is probably very obvious, but is this, you know, are we now going to see OM go unbeaten for the rest of the season? Is Gasset a genius? Is this the start of an incredible fairy tale comeback scenario where all of our rivals are shit in front of us? To be fair as well, when you look at the league, and Charles, you're right, and I think that was one of the most frustrating aspects of the end of Guttuso, is that actually everyone in front of us has dropped off, apart from Brest. Monaco winning the big game, so they won away at Lens, but then they drew home to crap teams. Nice have completely gone off the boil. Lille are very random and unpredictable. They win one game, draw the next two, lose the next one, then win again. So they weren't. They've not exactly opened up a huge gap. We're only 5 points from Lille in fifth, and that's the frustration. Is that if you win against Metz, well, it's 2 points, and that's where you couldn't just keep dropping points under Guttuso. Whilst you've got to capitalise on those guys fucking up in front of you. So we're now in that position. We can. You can see a scenario where, because we still have to play Nice and Lille in the league.
And Rennes and Lens.
Yeah, Rennes and Lens as well, but Lens a sort of similar level to, or similar standings to us in the league. Are we right to get excited, or is it too early, Charles, do you think?
That's a tough one. I mean, we've been so unlucky this season. I was once again checking our expected goal difference for the season. We should be second. We've been pretty poor in front of the goal, and Lopez has been awful this season. And it's not like we are second, like quite close to Brest or Monaco. We are really 4 or 5 goals ahead of everyone. So I felt like maybe the luck and bounce back a bit can help. And when I'm looking at like you just did with the fixtures, Rennes, it's getting better, but not great. But it's just after the second leg against Villarreal, so not counting on that. And then what's going to happen to Nice if they're starting to drop away from the top four? Then you have Toulouse. And a big question mark is where will it be when we play Lens at home and Reims away? Hopefully by that time Reims is mid-table and doesn't play anything. So I don't know. I think fifth is a realistic target. Fourth is a stretch because we got too many teams ahead of us already, and I don't see all of them dropping points. What the standing actually in Ligue 1? Yeah, you have Lens, Nice ahead of us, and Lille currently 4. So you need the 3 teams to drop points, and with 10 games left, it's a stretch for me. I see us getting to quarterfinal of Europa League, which is a season for Marseille, if you think, like finishing 5th and reaching quarterfinal of Europa League. It's a good season for the last 20 years. Let's be realistic about that. So, and it will be one of our worst seasons ever, with 3 managers and I don't know, all the drama we had this season. So I'll take that.
What about you, Kelly? Do you think we should prepare the champagne because we're gonna pip everyone else to 4th place, or too early to tell?
I'm gonna shock you here, but I think actually it's only 6 points to Monaco in 3rd, isn't it?
It is.
To be honest with you, I think just off the top of my head, and I don't know the other fixtures, but I think we have the harder fixture list of till the end, because we have Paris.
Of course we do.
Yeah. But you really don't know, like with them being so caught. It's hard to say, isn't it? Because let's be honest, we've played Clermont and a shit Montpellier. But I don't know. I think when you have that confidence and momentum, and as you say, I think Lille are pretty inconsistent, aren't they? And I don't know. I think, honestly, we could finish as high as third or... But I think realistically, fourth. I think fourth would be the aim. But again, we'll have the harder fixture list. But yeah, as for the Europa...
Yeah, it's interesting as well.
I mean we are just 6 points behind Monaco.
Yeah, six points. That's two games. You know, it's not... The season can turn fast. Monaco lose two games and we pick two up. Even in an unexpected win against a harder side like Paris, you never know.
We only won 9 games this season. They won 12.
Yeah, in the league, it's mental. Yeah,
yeah, that was pre-Pappy. This is a new... Papa's got a brand new bag.
But I guess just looking at the league, I mean, we'll get on to Europe just after this, but mathematically it's possible. I think it comes down to how long this run of confidence keeps up. But I was just going to highlight as well, I mean, Monaco don't have Europe. Lille is still in Europe. Lens have just been knocked out. So at what point are those two games a week going to catch up to us and Lille? Lille, I think they're already feeling the pain of that. We're on the cloud right now, but it may not continue. It depends, you know. But that will play its part as well, so, in terms of injuries and unavailabilities in the squad and stuff.
So let me give you the order and you tell me over or under. finishing second, 0.9%.
Yeah, there's no chance.
Third.
What about the future?
So third, 3.4%.
What? Yeah. That seems low for 6 points.
So you take
it's based on all of the fixtures that every team has left to play, Kayleigh, and also the fact that Monaco aren't in Europe, and the fact that they've already played PSG twice, for example, and that kind of thing. That's what they build these odds on.
Then fourth is 6.5%.
Seems low. That seems low to me.
Yeah,
fifth, 11%.
Yeah, it's very low.
And then most likely 6, 7, and 8 with 17, 23rd, and 24%.
So is it more weighted towards the
6, 7, 8
the fixture then?
Yes, I guess a mix of expected goals and the difficulty of the opposition, yeah.
Yeah. And as well, below, I think it's quite tight below it, isn't it, as well? With, like, Rennes.
Well, you aren't far as anymore, that kind of thing.
Toulouse are 3 points or something behind? I don't have the table at hand.
Toulouse is ahead now, they're 10th now. Can you believe that?
Oh.
it's Le Havre Montpellier now. Just ahead of relegation.
Okay.
Yeah, because it's only 18 teams this year, isn't it? Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, regardless, at one point under Gattuso, I think at one point we were only 8 points. Was it 8 or 7 from the drop? And I was with the fixture list ahead. I was thinking if we can't beat these teams, then we should be looking down that end. Now I'm thinking, is third that unrealistic? So just that in itself, it's nice, isn't it?
It's the ups and downs of OM, I guess. We'll finish up. We've done the league, I guess, but those odds seem low. I would say fourth is attainable, but we need all the stars to align. Fifth is my prediction, and I would take that. Europa League is good enough after this shit season. If we go straight into Europa League group stage, I would sign for that. But in Europe, so we beat Shakhtar, and the draw has given us a classic kind of OM scenario where we've drawn Villarreal and Marcelino is the coach there. it's going to be very feisty and interesting. He's going to get a horrible welcome at the Velodrome, but Villarreal are doing okay. I mean they beat Barcelona 5-3 away a few weeks ago. He came in there again similar. They were pretty crap. They had a poor start to the season. He stabilised the ship. And I guess just the question really, because we'll wrap up in a minute, but there are two camps. I'm firmly in the second one. The first camp is Marcelino, he was shit, he couldn't hack it at Marseille, we're going to steamroll him, he's going to shit himself at the Vélodrome, we're going to show the players and the Vélodrome are going to show him that he didn't belong here, we're going to prove a point. I'm more in the reserved second camp, which is I'm a bit wary because he helped build this squad and he knows the players and he knows the which buttons to press and he knows the fans will turn very quickly on the players if they go behind at the Vélodrome and that kind of thing. So I'm a bit mixed emotions here. I don't think it's as good or favourable a draw as many people are making out. I think he's going to give us a really hard time because he's in La Liga with Spanish teams and players that obviously are dear to whatever he's trying to put in place, he builds quite difficult to beat teams and they're quite hard to break down defensively. And I can see us getting frustrated. I'd be surprised personally if it's a high scoring tie, but I think we might nick it maybe 2-1 on aggregate over both games. Katie, which camp are you in and what's your prediction for the two legs?
Marcelino, I'm sure I've seen a quote on one of the French publications where he's saying kind of it'll just be another game for him, which I highly doubt. I think that's just trying to play it down, you know, because he will get a white hot reception, I'm sure of it. And he was humiliated ultimately, wasn't he, the way it all ended. But in terms of Villa, I don't watch that much La Liga, but I know I had a look at the results a while ago and they've been quite erratic, haven't they? They beat Barcelona, but before that they drew with Mallorca or Las Palmas or something, and they've drawn with Cadiz and Alaves, and I think recently they drew with Getafe as well, and then went and beat Sociedad away maybe, or maybe Betis.
Yeah, no, you're right. I'm on the
And then I'm sure they've just had a big win in the last game as well, but I can't remember who they were playing. Did they win like 6-0 or so? Yeah. So it'll be a difficult game, but apparently as well they're struggling with the stomach virus. A lot of the players are struggling with a bug or something, or maybe food poisoning. I can't remember which one. So I don't know. I think if we can get a draw there, that would be good to bring back. Yeah, then it's all to play for, you know.
Yeah, the food poisoning thing is probably like the ghost of Tepi, Moscow 1991. All those rumours at the time that they'd put something in their drinks, like it was, well, we probably did. It wouldn't surprise me. But
Pablo's gone too early. Then it's too soon for that. He should have waited till maybe.
dodgy bailout or something in their training ground. But but again, the thing is, it would be so OM to play a half depleted Villarreal and fuck it up because we take it too lightly and we think, oh yeah, half of their starting players are missing. We're gonna breeze this, and then they rally and embarrass us. Charles, your prediction? Are you? Do you think Marcelino is going to prove a point, or do you think that the ultras who got him to resign were right all along?
I don't like forecasting or forcing anything, but I'm definitely think he's a good coach. And similarly to Emery, on a Thursday night, he's going to have a game plan. And his players like Parejo, Capu, Gerard Moreno, on Thursday night, they will deliver. And the worst thing for us, For me, what is interesting is that's really an opposition of style between Gasset and Marcelino. Marcelino is very happy to leave the ball to us, putting his 4-4-2 and clinical counter-attack. The style that we absolutely hated and disliked at the beginning of the season, because you're at Vélodrome, you have like 40% possession. Playing that kind of zonal marking on your box, just waiting for the moment to kill. You can do this at Veral, you can't do this at Vélodrome. While Gasset is very happy to keep the ball and keep on trying, bang, 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 until it breaks. Until India, your Harry, got a genius moment to break the fort. So I'm really looking forward to the tactical opposition, especially at Vélodrome, because if we want to win on Thursday against Villarreal, we're going to need the crowd massively to break this. So that's what I'm really looking for. It's going to be an interesting game, I think. And Marcinho has a point to prove that he's a good coach. Those players he has are good players as well. And they can deliver from just one game. And I'm sure our players got a point to make as well to Marcelinho. So interesting opposition. I think we're going to get through. There's too much quality in this squad. Well coached. I think we'll get through.
Just you were saying about atmosphere there. Do we know what's happening if they're going to allow the kids in? Because we've got the stand ban, haven't we?
It's the Virage Nord is closed. I don't know. I don't think they will. I think it'll be similar to when I went with a few people for Feyenoord a few years ago when they let the fanatics go in Genève, and they cost. It was just as noisy as if they weren't there. As if they were in the Virage Nord. But I think the club will probably allow that. I'd be surprised if they didn't want to obviously caress the fans in the right way and make sure everybody's happy and allow them to still see a European game and not lose out on their season tickets they paid for. It is going to be a bit of a ball ache, but yeah, we're carrying this suspended sentence for 2 years now in a way as well. We can go to Villarreal, but the next flare they see, UEFA are going to ban us for 2 years from travelling to away games in Europe. And I really hope it doesn't come to that. But it's OM, and people will tell you it's part of our fan culture. But until they
place as well, isn't it?
Yeah, but until I thought I read somewhere that they were trialing safe flares in Germany, like non-flammable flares or something. I don't know what's happened with that.
Denmark, apparently UEFA were, I think as well.
No, I've never heard that. Yeah.
Apparently UEFA were open to the idea and stuff, but it's obviously not gone anywhere because if not, it would already be in place.
They're too busy enforcing the financial fair play.
Oh yeah, well, you know, it's just the typical irony of you get a 2 year suspended sentence for lighting a flare, but racist chants, 10k fine, no problem.
Yeah,
it's just standard, isn't it?
I think we'll
draw there 0-0, and then I think we'll win 2-1 at the Villarreal.
Hold on, first game is at home, right, man?
Oh, okay, sorry. So, yeah.
I thought we'd get that way around too.
No, we're going through the playoff.
Yeah, it's true.
Okay.
Interesting. I think we'll win 1-0 at the Villarreal and then we'll get 1-1 there.
I wish it had been the other way around because I think if we could have took a draw back from there.
Yeah.
I totally forgot that, to be honest. you have to get a win at home, don't you? Yeah.
Well, you have to, yeah. If you want any chance.
Yeah, 2-0 at the bell and then sneak a draw there.
Let's hope so. Glad that it's been a long time since any of us have been confident on the show, so that's good.
That's why it's going to hit us badly.
Yeah, that's why we're going to get beaten in the ass. Well, bitten in the ass. It's revenge will come for us, karma. But let's finish with these with the stats. Which again fills everybody with hope is the last time OM had a manager over 70, we win the Champions League with Guedes. So maybe Gessé can win the Europa League, right?
Awesome.
It's not happening.
Wishful thinking. Guys,
anything can happen with Papi Gessé. Anything.
We're all on the bandwagon.
As well, what we forgot to mention as well. Deserves a little big credit. Aubameyang, and he broke the record, didn't he? 31 goals, highest Europa League scorer.
Yeah, it was Falcao, wasn't it? Falcao was the holder. Yeah, Falcao's now the top scorer. Yeah, and he's still in activity, and it's likely based on Charles' odds that we'll be playing in Europa League again next year, so he'll get the chance to score a few more probably.
Pablo would have already
trained him. Probably would have sold him to Saudi. Thanks for joining, guys. Good to be back. But yeah, we'll see. We'll try and get something out after both those ties, I guess, so we can debrief if we were right or wrong. Have a good night, everyone.
See ya.
Night.